Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
In this Best of the Pigskin Dispatch episode of the Football History Headlines, we discuss the Burt Bell Benefit Bowl, a game where teams played for third place in the NFL, as well as many more Hall of Fame legendary stories and birthdays of the Hall of Famers for this day, all coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And before we get going on these January 7th football history headlines and birthdays of Hall of Famers for January 7th, I want to tell you about, we have a new site that's come on to the Dispatch family. It is the Sports Jersey Dispatch. It's found at JerseyDispatch.com. And we have some great things happening over there. We're not just covering the game of football, but we're covering a wide array of sports from around the world. We're starting off this year. 2022 is our goal. We're going to get Major League Baseball. We're going to get American professional hockey, and we're going to get American professional basketball in the record books. And we're going to talk about it every day. And we're going to do the sports history through the jerseys and the jersey numbers that players wore, and just recognize some of these great athletes in all these other sports. A little bit different way to look at sports history and preserve it. And we hope you'll join us at JerseyDispatch.com. And you can find us, and we'll start having podcasts on your favorite podcast provider, the Sports Jersey Dispatch podcast. And don't worry, we will not stop doing your Pigskin Dispatch podcast. Just another compliment to the Dispatch family and to the Sports History Network, just to bring you some extra sports history into your daily lives. We hope you enjoy that. Hope you'll tune into. And now to your football history headlines for January 7th. First, we're going to start off with your football history headlines, and we're going to go to one of the names that I told you about in the intro, Walter Camp. On January 7th, 1899, Mr. Camp started publishing his first All-American football team in Collier's magazine. Might be a little biased because 12 of the 13 players were from the Ivy League schools. The sole exception was Isaac Seneca, a Native American who played the fullback position for the Carlisle Indian Industrial School. Camp, along with Casper Whitney, started publishing The Otter in 1889 in a magazine called The Week's Sport, and then in Harper's Weekly, per Britannica.com, for a few years before moving to Collier's. 1899 was the first year the Collier's received the honor of the publication, and Camp and them would carry on the tradition every year until Camp's untimely death in 1925. The magazine then asked Grantland Rice, the era's most prominent sports writer, continued the annual selection, and he did so graciously, just like Walter Camp. Now we move to more modern times. January 7, 1961, the Orange Bowl in Miami, Florida. The first NFL playoff bowl was played between the Detroit Lions and the Cleveland Browns. According to the AmericanFootball.Fandom.com website, the game was officially named the Burt Bell Benefit Bowl, and it was created to determine the third-place finisher in the NFL as it pitted the two losing teams from the divisional playoff games. And I want you to just try to say Burt Bell Benefit Bowl three times real fast. Let's get back to the game. It was played 10 different times from 1960 through the 1969 season. The name was in honor of the late Burt Bell, who was the former NFL commissioner and co-founder of the Philadelphia Eagles and former co-owner of the Pittsburgh Steelers. The game was developed to give the NFL more television airtime to compete with the AFL. The American Football League had a contract with ABC to air most of their regular season games as well as its postseason. The more established NFL was lagging behind a rival league, as very few regular season games were on national television broadcast at that time, and only the NFL championship game was on during the postseason contests shown around the country. This new playoff bowl was played the week after the NFL championship game. In the game itself, the 1961 Detroit Lions beat Cleveland in an exciting one-point game, 17-16, to claim third place in the pecking order for the 1960 NFL season. January 7, 1962, at Balboa Stadium in San Diego, the inaugural AFL All-Star Game was played. The contest pitted the best from the AFL's Western Division against the greats from the AFL's Eastern Division. The story of the game is nicely told on RememberTheAFL.com. Players such as Jim Otto, Jack Kemp, and Coach Sid Gilman were on the West sidelines, while the East boasted George Blanda, Billy Cannon, and Gino Cappelletti. The outcome was that the Western Division outshined the Eastern Division 47-27. The MVP of the game was the Dallas Texans quarterback Cotton Davidson. January 7, 1979, at Three River Stadium in Pittsburgh, the AFC Championship game once again came to the home of the Steelers per the ProFootballReference.com website. It was the Houston Oilers, the Steelers' AFC Central rivals, who came to met the challenge the team of the 1970s on this occasion. It was a very sloppy game for being the two best teams in the AFC, as there were 14 turnovers committed between the two offenses, 9 of them against the Oilers. The Steel Curtain defense came to play as they held the Oilers' powerful running back Earl Campbell to only 62 yards rushing and flustered Houston's passing attack to less than 100 yards for a grand total of 142 yards of offensive production on a day for the Oilers. Meanwhile, Terry Bradshaw and company churned out 379 yards as the Steelers defeated the Oilers 34-5 to advance to the Super Bowl. Now let's take a quick break from our headlines, and let me remind you, you can learn more about gridiron history on our website, pigskindispatch.com, and you can contact me, Darren Hayes, at pigskindispatch@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Speaking of hearing from someone who's here, is one of my podcasting partners from the sportshistorynetwork.com that has a message just for you.
Hi, this is John Gidley. Join me each Friday for a trip into the football attic, where I'll delve into forgotten but noteworthy stories of the National Football League. You're bound to learn something new or have your memory jogged each week. That's every Friday, only on the Sports History Network and wherever podcasts are available.
January 7, 1979, at the LA Memorial Coliseum, the NFC Championship game was extremely one-sided as the Dallas Cowboys demolished the Los Angeles Rams 28-0 so that the Cowboys would meet the Steelers in the Super Bowl. We'll save the details for that game in a couple weeks when it comes up in our football history headlines. Then we go to January 7th, 2008, at the Louisiana Superdome in New Orleans. The game was the All-State Sugar Bowl to be played for the 2008 BCS National Championship. The top team in the country, the Ohio State Buckeyes, were challenged with the number 2 team in the nation, the LSU Tigers, per the AllStateSugarBowl.com website. The game started off strong for Ohio State as they held a 10-3 lead at the end of the first quarter. The Tigers had something else in mind as they then rattled off 21 unanswered points in the second quarter to take the lead that they would not once again relinquish. Louisiana State became the national champs as they stunned the Buckeyes 38-24 at the All-State Sugar Bowl. And since we're talking about national championship college games, let's go to January 7th, 2010. The Rose Bowl in Pasadena, California. The 12th BCS National Championship took place as the Rose Bowl played its turn to host the big game. The number 2 Texas Longhorns were out for the title against the number 1 Alabama Crimson Tide. The Bama defense got after it early and knocked Texas star quarterback Colt McCoy out of the game early and then wore the Texas defense down with a strong running game from the tandem of Mark Ingram and Trent Richardson, who each went over 100 yards in the game. The Crimson Tide took home the title as they outlasted Texas 37-21 per ESPN.com. January 7, 2013, at Sun Life Stadium in Miami Gardens, the 15th BCS National Championship was not much of a game at all, as powerful number 2 Alabama outmatched number 1 Notre Dame's Fighting Irish 42-14, per the sportsreference.com website. And it shows that Tide runners TJ Yeldon and Eddie Lacy each went over 100 yards in the romp. Now let's check out your recent memory. January 7th, 2019, Levi Stadium in Santa Clara, California. The national championship game pitted the top two teams in the country once again as the number two Clemson Tigers took on number one Alabama. CBSSports.com reports that with a strong defense and on the arm of the Tigers' sensational freshman quarterback Trevor Lawrence, who passed for 347 yards and three touchdowns to lead Clemson to a dominating claim at the title and a 44-16 shocking victory over Alabama. Now let's get to those birthdays of legends. January 7th, 1884, Bartlesville, Oklahoma. Carlisle's fantastic end, Albert Exendine, was born. Albert played on the all-Native American teams of the Carlisle Institute just after the turn of the 20th century. The National Football Foundation describes how good of an end Exendine truly was. In fact, they quote his coach, the legendary Pop Warner, as calling Albert sheer brilliance on the football field. Albert may have just had his best game of his young career when against the University of Chicago Maroons, he repeatedly stuffed legendary halfback Wally Steffen. Walter Camp in 1907 named Exendine to his All-American team, and just as we learned a little bit earlier in this edition of the Football History Headlines, it was with Collier's Magazine. The NFL voters selected Albert Exendine to enter into the College Football Hall of Fame in the year 1970. January 7th, 1930, San Rafael, California. Quarterback Eddie LeBaron from the College of the Pacific celebrated his day of birth. Eddie's first year in the gridiron was the last one for the legendary coach Amos Alonzo Stagg. LeBaron played for three more seasons after that great experience when Stagg retired and used what he learned well. In 1949, according to the NFL's bio on him, Pacific's offense with Eddie under center was averaging 52 points per game while allowing opponents to average a measly 6 points per game. LeBaron wasn't just good with his Pacific teammates, as shown when he was the most valuable player in the East-West Shrine Game, as well as in 1950 when Eddie quarterbacked the College All-Stars to a 17-7 victory over the champion Philadelphia Eagles. Eddie LeBaron was inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame in the year 1980. We thank you once again for joining us and listening to our podcast on a daily basis, and we want to make sure that you join us back tomorrow for the January 8th Football History Headlines and Birthdays of Hall of Fame Legends, as we will go into some great stories that will really make you excited about football history and get ready for those big games. So make sure you join us by hitting the subscribe button on your embed player that you're playing this podcast on, or join us at pigskindispatch.com on a daily time. And if you want to make sure you have a remembrance to do that, you can email us at pigskindispatch@gmail.com, and we'll be sure to send you our daily email out to all of our email subscribers. Just a reminder that you can check out the podcast and the website for the latest articles. You can also find us on the great sportshistorynetwork.com, where with this podcast, and there's 12 other podcasts right now, is growing all the time, with great sports history in mind, not just football, but you have all sports coming at you, including, you know, boxing, weightlifting, baseball, basketball. There's all kinds of them that you really enjoy with some great hosts, very talented people, and some great guests on those interviews. So make sure you check out the sportshistorynetwork.com. Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Just another ordinary day in the offices of the Pittsburgh Guardian newspaper circa 1924. But for Marla Delft, assistant editor, everything was about to change. For she was about to discover the awesome attractiveness of Row One brand retro sports paraphernalia items, thanks to Orville Mulligan, sports writer.
And there it is. Wow, Orville, that's really the bee's knees.
Isn't it just? A poster-sized replica of the actual 1909 World Series program cover.
I can see that. But where did you get it? And where'd you get it framed?
I ordered it from the Row One website, where over 6,000 items of sports memorabilia from the 1880s to the 1990s are available for reproduction in multiple sizes and in several different materials, with over a dozen styles of frame to choose from for prints like this.
Well, I'm sure Mr. Delft would love to put up more of these in the office. But I'm equally as sure they're beyond this newspaper's budget.
Not at all, my dear Marla. See for yourself. Go to sportshistorynetwork.com/row1.
sportshistorynetwork.com/row1. Oh my, these are good prices. Oh, and look at this stuff. Oklahoma-Nebraska football. College basketball art. Michael Jordan items.
And so it was that Marla Delft discovered the splendiferous magic of Row One sports memorabilia arts and prints. You can too by visiting sportshistorynetwork.com/row1. That's ROW number one today for access to the full Row One catalog of gallery prints and gifts like t-shirts, long sleeve shirts, telephone cases, coffee mugs, blankets, pillows, towels, and even shower curtains. Act today for a 15% discount off all prints with coupon code SHN15 and 20% off all other items with coupon code SHN20 at checkout. And keep your dial locked to the Sports History Network for the exciting chronicles of the 1920 sports world in Orville Mulligan, sports writer, coming soon.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that. Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts. It's found right here on the Sports History Network.